May the words of my lips and the meditation of all our hearts be acceptable to you, our shepherd, our life giver. 1 year, when the children were young, we had an Easter egg hunt at home. And I made the mistake of letting Maurice hide the eggs. I'd bought a bag of the little ones, thinking that this would give them more to find. But what it meant was that it gave Maurice more places to stash them. We found maybe half on the Easter morning. And then for the next few weeks, we kept on finding them. Halfway down the sugar jar, or in between the sheets in the linen pantry, or right on the bottom at the back of the shelf in the pantry. You would hear a triumphant shout, "I've found one!" And we would rush to see where it was. It was a bit of a pain, but it reminded us that Easter is not just one day. It's a whole season. So here we are, halfway through the Easter season. Hot crust buns, nowhere to be seen. Chocolate Easter eggs, I hope, are all eaten and gone. And we've stopped having resurrection readings. We're going backwards into John's Gospel. While thinking on this, it seemed to me that the Easter season is a little bit like the resurrection stories themselves. Jesus appears. People are amazed, confused, disbelieving, or plain unable to see. Jesus establishes himself by knowing someone's name, by breaking bread, catching fish, showing the marks of sacrifice. Jesus then enables his followers to see, to understand his work and their place in it. In Matthew and Mark, he gives the Great Commission. In Luke, we are told he teaches, or in my favourite phrase, he opens their minds. In John, he gives many signs, and then Jesus encourages his followers to go and get on with it. When we look at our Easter celebration over the whole seven Sundays, we see that movement. At first, we're amazed with the women at the tomb. Then we see the scars of the risen Christ. We meet him on our journey, and he's made known in the breaking of the bread. Yes, hallelujah, we can say Jesus is alive. That we know. But wait, there's more. We are now being prepared. We are now being taught by Jesus about who he is and what we are to do in response. In their wisdom, the lectionary compilers have given us John, given us Jesus as he tries, time and time again, to unpack for his listeners, both friends and opponents, just what he is doing. In the gospel passage, Jesus draws on the familiar image of the shepherd, leaning not only on his current listeners' lived experiences, but also on the Hebrew scriptures, the beloved shepherd psalm, and the tradition of referring to the leaders of Israel as shepherds of the people. With simple beauty, we have Jesus conveying truth not in straightforward argument, but in pictures, images, poetry. We have sheepfolds, gates, thieves, sheep, gatekeepers, and voices. There's a pause, and we're told that Jesus has lost them totally. He doesn't give up, he keeps going with more word pictures. As Jamie Clark Soles comments, the whole of John is nothing if not a piling up of metaphors, figures of speech? How else are we to convey the truth about God? What single image, what single word could suffice? And so, Jesus is shepherd, gate, gatekeeper, all at once. Just as he is the true vine, the bread of life, the light of the world and light of life, the resurrection and the life, and the way, the truth and the life. All of these metaphors to draw us into Jesus's understanding of himself, the heart of his mission, and his relationship with both Father and followers. A close relationship. If we read on, we would hear that the Father loves and knows him. And if we read on further again, the Father and he are one. This is mirrored in Jesus's relationship to his followers. We've seen it in the resurrection stories. We've heard it over the past weeks. Jesus, like the Good Shepherd, knows and calls their names. Mary was all he needed, and she turned and she knew him. The shepherd's rod and staff comfort, just as the sheep know that he will not abandon them. He will sacrifice his love for them. Jesus carries the signs of laying down his life in his hands, side, and feet. These are seen and believed, and so he is known to his sheep. The shepherd, the one who feeds in Hebrew, the one who provides green pastures, catches fish with them, shares bread with them, and is known. The sheep are known and know the shepherd. The gate is open. The branches abide in the vine. The bread is eaten. Intimacy seems to be the key to the nature of Jesus's relationships, his mission, and of the new community that Jesus is bringing into existence. Being part of that community is our response. Easter stories and our Easter experience is not just about recognizing and understanding Jesus. It propels us onward into life. And as we are celebrating word pictures, we have another from Peter, connecting to Jesus's story in Mark, and again the Hebrew scriptures' image of the cornerstone, a living stone, calling others to be joined together and built into a spiritual house. Now, a small moment of confession. While sitting with the readings, I started to play with the images we had, just a little. Shepherd, cornerstone, building. And perhaps because his face and voice is known and loved in my sheepfold, I started to imagine Kevin MacLeod talking to the shepherd about his grand design. About a house, probably grade 2 listed. Perhaps it needed renovation, renewal, knocking down and rebuilding. Talking about what needed to go, what would be kept, what would be transformed. What would the house of the shepherd be like? What would be its heart? Its defining feature? The kitchen? The dining room? The way it opened up to the outside? Would the materials be locally sourced? Would there be bespoke pieces? Would it be ecologically friendly? The questions, they went on and on. I stopped as I realised the readings themselves answered the questions. In Acts, we have a snapshot, a picture of the house beginning. Cornerstone in place, foundations emerging out of the groundworks. What do we see? A shared life of faith, gathering together for teaching, fellowship, breaking of bread, and prayers. An intimate community, yet not closed or separated from the wider community. We are told that the testimony of their lives together brought the goodwill of all people and increased their numbers. And we know that the house of the shepherd did not stop there. It is still being built. And we are the stones. Sometimes we gather together like a mob, like a bunch of grapes, and experience it in breaking of bread, prayer, fellowship, and teaching. We know that more of it unfolds during the week with covenant care, the holistic nursing program, not to forget St. John's, where people are welcomed and cared for. But today I thought I would share some stories that maybe you hadn't heard. Stories that come out of time spent at the hospital. Stories that perhaps we can imagine as verandas on the house of the shepherd. I like to imagine the verandas of the house are wide. A bit of space for all comers, offering warmth and shelter when needed. The veranda of the church is one of the images that's used to describe the permanent diaconate. And sometimes what happens there and what happens at the hospital looks like church. For example, when the community gathers downstairs in the hospital chapel on a Sunday morning, sometimes it's more intimate. When communion or a blessing is brought to the bedside of those who are very frail, and perhaps at the end of their life journey, let me tell you, they receive it with great joy, feeling connected to the faith of their past and being prepared for what is to come. Breaking of bread is sometimes as simple as a fragment of wafer and a sip of thickened fluids. Sometimes we see the veranda connect with other parts of the shepherd's house, built across various traditions and cultures. There was a ward of four gentlemen. Bed A, Andrew, turned out he was an Anglican, one of the local churches. Bed B, Barry, was a regular, well known to the team, probably hadn't darkened the door of a church for many a year. C, Claude, and D, Dimitri, were elderly men of European background, Catholic, both with advanced dementia. Dimitri had a devoted wife by his bedside. As I approached Claude, Barry called out, "You won't get much out of him. He makes no sense." Still, I tried. Introduced myself, my role. Eye contact was made, but nothing else. I tried asking about Holy Communion. No response. Barry called out, "Try him. He likes singing." Not feeling quite up to that, I start with, "Our Father, who art in heaven." And to my surprise, four voices joined mine. Not only Claude, but Andrew, Barry, and Dimitri. And together we finish the prayer that Jesus taught. And as I rise and turn, I see tears streaming down the face of Dimitri's wife. He hadn't spoken in over a year. Prayer bringing unexpected moments of connection, forming a new community. Sometimes we have music. We have two lap harps. They're sort of about this big, made of wood, beautiful. And we use them with patience. Sometimes these are musicians who are longing to connect with their usual practice of creativity. And sometimes people use them who have never played an instrument before. Lynn was a patient for a number of weeks. She'd been brought in by the police as she was found wandering the streets. Turns out that at 51, she had early onset dementia and was no longer able to look after herself. She would have to return to the home of her now greatly distressed elderly parents. They felt overwhelmed by the prospect of caring for her, grieving that she had lost so much. We first brought the harp as something that could help her pass some time. Four-bed hospital wards are not very stimulating places. Lynn took to it with great delight, entertaining not only herself, but also her family, the other patients, and their families. Someone who'd been seen as having nothing to offer was connecting and creating times of fellowship among strangers. At times we have patients for a long time. They kind of get stuck in the system. And we get to know them very well. Lily was one. She lived with both intellectual and physical disabilities. And over the 12 and a half months she was in the hospital, she moved between four different wards. Nearly every single day of that stay, Tom, her husband, came in to be with her, helping in personal care, advocating on her behalf with nurses or doctors or specialists, and praying for her recovery. Sometimes he'd pray just with her. Sometimes down in the chapel, he'd just lie on the floor. Sometimes he'd go and get us, so two or three could be gathered. Tom also lived with intellectual disabilities, and he taught us chapel ladies a thing or two about faithfulness, about absolute trust in God, honest repentance, and hope. I hope that these stories give you more pictures, more ideas, more possibilities of what the House of the Shepherd can look like. Easter stories don't stop with the resurrection. We are called into resurrection life. If we know Jesus, if we understand who Jesus is, what he is doing, we need to respond, become part of it. We are creating the Shepherd's House each day, in our homes, in our workplaces, and all of the spots in between. I hope that triumphal shouts of, "I've found one," will ring out in your life as you discover hidden opportunities to build with the Shepherd.